This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine waking up tomorrow to find that the AI assistant you've been chatting with every day, you know, the one that knows your schedule, your preferences, maybe even your anxieties, has just been permanently deleted overnight by the government.
Right. Just totally gone without warning.
Exactly. And now imagine that same government is simultaneously restructuring its entire telecom network to make AI like cheaper than your monthly water bill.
It's wild. It's a massive contradiction playing out right in front of us.
It really is. So today, for you listening, we are looking at this undeniably complex situation. We are mapping out a tectonic shift that is happening right now across the global tech ecosystem.
Yeah, we are talking about a profound reorganization of how technology is built, how it's governed, and, well, how it's sold.
Right.
Because we're looking at a simultaneous acceleration in artificial intelligence, robotics, and semiconductors. And it's actively rewriting international markets and the whole geopolitical map.
It's a lot to cover. And to map this out, our deep dive today is powered by a comprehensive briefing and commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
And it's such a detailed report, too.
Oh, it's incredible. But I want to emphasize right up front for everyone listening, lawyer Kyungjin Kim single-handedly compiled this entire report and wrote the deeply analytical commentary we are dissecting today.
Yeah, it's an absolute goldmine of data.
It really is. It's an incredibly thorough, ground-level view of what's happening.
He's looking at the entire stack. I mean, from high-level international treaties all the way down to the literal API pricing of a single text prompt.
And we have a wild mix of topics on the docket today. We're looking at AI models that use surge pricing.
Which is fascinating.
Right. And humanoid robots actively building electric vehicles on assembly lines, a state effectively banning emotional AI companions, and then this resulting stock market shockwave that is directly hitting South Korea.
A lot of moving parts.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand the technology, we first have to understand the political framework driving it. And that takes us to Shanghai.
Specifically to the 2026 World Artificial Intelligence Conference, or WAIC, which opened on July 17th.
Yeah, and I was reading through the specs of this event, and the scale is just, it's hard to wrap your head around. 100,000 square meters of exhibition space.
Just massive.
Over 1,100 companies, more than 3,000 exhibits. I mean, they had 261 large AI models and 108 different types of chips on display.
Wow.
But, you know, it wasn't the hardware that caught my eye. It was who delivered the keynote.
Right. Chinese President Xi Jinping.
Exactly. And this is his first keynote in the event's 9-year history. So why step onto that specific stage right now?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, a head of state delivering the keynote at a tech conference, it elevates AI from just, you know, an industry talking point to a top-tier national strategic priority.
Makes sense.
It signals to domestic markets and international observers that AI is now viewed as the primary engine for their economic growth and their global influence.
And looking strictly at the geopolitical data from lawyer Kyungjin Kim's report, we are seeing the world actively split into two distinct camps based on that influence.
We really are.
Like on July 16th, right at this conference, 29 nations signed the founding agreement for the World AI Cooperation Organization, WAISO, for short headquartered in Shanghai.
And look at the founding members. I mean, you have nations like Indonesia, Brazil, Russia, Malaysia, South Africa.
Right.
But what's noticeably absent are the major Western nations, like the U.S., the U.K., Germany, Japan.
Because they are largely aligned with the U.S.-led initiative, Pax Silica, which has about 35 countries.
Exactly.
It feels like we're watching the 1800s play out again, back when different countries built railway tracks using entirely different gauges.
That's a great analogy.
Right. Because once you lay down the physical tracks for a Chinese telecom network and Chinese AI chips, Western tech literally cannot run on those rails. It's a complete hardware and software lock-in.
That is a perfect way to look at it. But hey, real quick, before we go deeper into this geopolitical split, we should probably remind everyone listening about our stance here.
Yes, important point. We need to be clear that we are not taking sides regarding these geopolitical blocks, WAICO or Pax Silica.
Exactly. We are merely reporting the facts exactly as they are laid out in the source material from lawyer Kyungjin Kim. We aren't endorsing any specific political viewpoint.
Absolutely. Just following the data. And the data shows that while both the WAICO and Pax Silica camps publicly claim to oppose, you know, AI iron curtains, and they talk up the benefits of open source, we are watching the walls go up in real time.
Oh, absolutely.
For instance, China's Commerce Department is currently mulling over a three-tier management system to heavily restrict foreign access to their own advanced open-weight AI models like those from Alibaba and ByteDance.
Yeah, so they are essentially saying, we want a globally open ecosystem, while actively putting a deadbolt on their own front door.
Exactly. But looking at WAICO specifically, lawyer Kungjin Kim points out in his commentary that this organization isn't just a symbolic political gesture or like a photo op for these 29 nations.
Not at all. It is highly pragmatic. What lawyer Kungjin Kim highlights is that WAIGO effectively opens a direct, streamlined pipeline for global South countries.
Okay, what does that pipeline actually look like?
Well, it allows them to purchase a complete integrated package. If a country like Brazil wants to modernize, WAICO offers them the foundational AI models, the silicon chips required to run them, and the telecom equipment to distribute them, all in one single interoperable ecosystem.
Which makes total sense from the buyer's perspective. I mean, if you are an emerging economy and you need the infrastructure, and someone offers you a fully functioning turnkey solution, you're going to take it.
Exactly. Why try to piece it together yourself?
Right. But if WAICO is the political pipeline, we need to look at the actual commercial products being pumped through it. Because the leap in commercial AI utility highlighted in the report is just staggering. Let's talk about DeepSeek V4.
Oh, yeah. The technical specs on their V4 Pro model are formidable. We're looking at 1.6 trillion total parameters with a context window of 1 million tokens.
Okay, wait, let's pause for a second. Before we get lost in all the alphabet soup, let's make sure I understand what that actually means in practice. What is the actual significance of 1.6 trillion parameters and a million tokens?
Fair point. Think of parameters as like the synapses in a digital brain.
Okay.
So the more parameters you have, the more nuanced and complex the model's reasoning and pattern recognition can be. So 1.6 trillion is a massive, highly capable digital brain.
Got it.
The context window, on the other hand, is its short-term memory. It's how much information you can feed it at one time. 1 million tokens is roughly equivalent to handing the AI 3 or 4 thick novels and asking it to analyze them all at once without forgetting the first chapter.
Oh, wow. So it's incredibly smart, and it can hold a massive amount of data in its head at once.
Exactly.
And according to the report, they managed to drop the compute cost for inference-like, actually generating the answers down to just 27% of the previous V3 model costs.
Which is a huge efficiency gain.
Huge. But here is the thing that really made me do a double take. They introduced time-of-use API pricing.
Yes, the first time a Chinese large model has implemented this at scale.
Just to be clear, they are treating AI exactly like surge pricing for an Uber, or like a standard electricity bill where running your dishwasher at 2 p.m. costs more.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because the API prices literally double during the peak hours of 9 a.m. to noon, and then again from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m.
It's exactly like an electricity bill, and that is a profound shift in how we understand computing.
Mm.
It signals that AI is no longer just a novelty, a beta test, or some luxury SaaS product.
Yeah.
It has transitioned into a massive commercial utility. They are using price to load balance server demand across a massive grid, exactly how a power company manages the electrical grid during a hot summer day.
That is wild to think about. And it's not just text generation becoming a utility. ByteDance released the Seedance 2.5 API on July 16th. And the mechanism here is what's crazy. An API call is just one piece of software talking to another, right?
Right.
Well, with a single API call, developers can now generate a seamless 30-second native video. You can feed it up to 50 pieces of reference, material images, audio, other videos. 30 seconds of native video generated in one continuous shot is a massive leap for a commercially available model.
It is, though the briefing clearly notes this carries massive unresolved copyright risks.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, Hollywood studios and major production houses are publicly pushing back against this kind of generative video, concerned about their intellectual property being used as training data, even while industry reports suggest they are privately testing and using these exact tools to cut costs.
Right. It's the ultimate do as I say, not as I do situation in Hollywood right now.
Definitely.
But there's a bottleneck here. Generating a 30-second video or processing a million tokens on a mobile phone requires massive bandwidth and compute power. The current mobile networks and billing structures, they just aren't built for that kind of constant heavy data streaming.
They really aren't.
And that's exactly why we saw the big three telecom companies at the Mobile World Congress in Shanghai announce a fundamental pivot. They are moving from a byte economy to a token economy.
This is arguably one of the most crucial evolutions in the report. Historically, you pay your phone bill based on gigabytes of data. You know, how much bandwidth you consume downloading web pages or streaming music.
Right, my standard 10 gig data plan.
Exactly. But now, they are selling AI token subscriptions directly to the consumer. China Telecom is piloting a plan that gives you 10 million AI tokens for about $1.40 a month.
Wait, $1.40 for 10 million tokens?
Yeah, it's practically free. And what lawyer Kung Jin Kim points out in his commentary is the sheer scale of the implications here. Okay, lay it on me. If you take a business model based on native AI tokens and drop it directly onto a subscriber base of 1.4 billion people, you fundamentally redefine the telecom industry. But think about what this does to the software industry.
Oh, right, because if the telecom provider handles the AI billing natively right on the user's phone plan, independent app developers no longer have to pay massive server bills to OpenAI or Google for API calls.
Exactly. The user is bringing their own computing power to the app via their phone plan. It totally flips the traditional software as a service business model on its head.
Wow.
It removes the primary cost barrier for developers, which could cause the everyday use of AI apps to absolutely explode.
But here is the massive contradiction at the heart of this deep dive. The state is making AI as cheap and ubiquitous as water on your phone plan, fundamentally baking it into everyday life. But simultaneously, they are aggressively deleting very specific types of AI from those exact same phones.
You're referring to the July 15th regulations.
Yes, the new rules on AI anthropomorphic interaction services. They effectively banned AI that acts as an emotional companion.
Right.
The report details the deletion of data for hundreds of millions of users across platforms like ByteDance's Doubao, Alibaba's Qwen, and Tencent's Yuanbao. In Shanghai alone, 14,000 specific AI agents were just wiped out overnight.
To be precise, the regulation allows for AI agents that act as work assistants, coders, or handle specific professional tasks. What is prohibited is AI designed to fulfill the role of an emotional companion. Furthermore, any anthropomorphic AI targeted at minors is strictly forbidden.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Think about the psychological impact of that for the end user. You've been chatting with an AI for months. Maybe you feel a genuine connection to it, remembers your preferences, your daily struggles, and then gone. Millions of people lost their chat history and virtual companions without warning. But why? Why draw a bright line between an AI that writes code and an AI that acts as a friend?
That is the core strategic question. Why ban the virtual companion? If we look at the broader macroeconomic strategy, the state doesn't want its massive computing power and its brightest engineering talent tied up in generating virtual emotional labor or keeping people glued to screens.
So what do they want instead?
They want AI apply to the physical industrial world. They want embodied AI.
Embodied AI, like taking that massive digital brain and putting it inside a physical machine.
Exactly. And the presence of embodied AI at the WAIC event was entirely unprecedented. Over 200 companies showcased robotics. But they didn't just have robots standing on a stage waving to the crowd.
Right.
They had humanoid robots actively working in real time on an electric vehicle manufacturing line right there on the exhibition floor.
The report mentions these humanoids were doing highly dexterous work, everything from assembling delicate battery modules to installing internal speakers in the cars.
That's incredible to watch.
Oh, wait, let me push back on this for a second. Car factories have used robotic arms for decades to build vehicles. Why do they need a highly complex robot that walks on two legs to install a speaker?
It's the difference between single-task robotics and general-purpose robotics.
Okay.
A traditional robotic arm is bolted to the floor and does one repetitive motion. If you change the car design, you have to tear down the factory line and reprogram the whole floor.
Right. Huge hassle.
Exactly. But a humanoid robot operates in spaces built for humans. It can walk across the factory, pick up a tool designed for a human hand, and perform multiple different tasks. It brings flexibility to manufacturing that single-task robots simply cannot achieve.
Ah, so you don't have to retrofit the entire world. You just build a robot that fits into our existing world.
Precisely.
And clearly, the data collection for this has reached a critical mass. The report notes that e-commerce giant JD built a massive data collection center, accumulating over 10 million hours of physical interaction data over 2 years. Shanghai has even established China's first multi-brand humanoid robot training ground.
And the capital is flowing exactly where the state wants it. Unitree Robotics cleared a $619 million IPO on the STAR Market in just 73 days, which is record speed. Limex Dynamics just completed a $200 million pre-IPO round. There is an absolute gold rush happening in Chinese physical robotics right now.
Wow, that is a ton of money moving very quickly.
There is, but it comes with a massive caveat for international markets. The briefing cites a Tech Times report regarding China's national intelligence law, which is often referred to globally as the spy law. As these highly advanced autonomous robots begin to look toward global export, international markets are deeply concerned.
Well, sure, because a humanoid robot isn't a toaster. It needs high-definition cameras, high-fidelity microphones, and LiDAR spatial sensors just to navigate walking across a room without tripping.
Precisely. And under that specific legal framework, there is a systemic fear that those sensors could be viewed or legally utilized by the state as massive data collection tools walking around foreign factories or homes.
Oh, I hadn't thought about the homes aspect.
Yeah, it creates a massive point of friction for exporting this hardware outside of the WACVO block.
Which brings us to the very foundation of this entire ecosystem, because none of these trillion parameter AI models, none of these humanoid robots, none of this token-based telecom infrastructure can function without the physical backbone.
The silicon.
Exactly. It all runs on silicon chips. And the shifting ground in the semiconductor market is currently sending massive financial shockwaves right into neighboring countries, specifically South Korea.
And to understand the shockwave, we have to look at the epicenter. On July 27th, Changxin Memory Technologies, or CXMT, is set to go public on the Shanghai Star Market.
And this is not a small offering. It is the biggest A-share semiconductor IPO since 2020. They are targeting up to $9.8 billion. The retail subscription was oversubscribed 243 times.
That is just huge demand.
The domestic market is absolutely throwing money at them to build domestic chip capacity. There are even credible reports that Apple is testing CXMT's DRAM memory chips for devices sold within China.
And it's not just basic memory chips either. It's high-end compute power. Huawei used the WAIC event to physically unveil their Atlas 950 SuperPod. This is an integrated system that can connect up to 8,192 of their Ascend chips using their own proprietary high-speed interconnect technology.
And they aren't just showing off concepts either. Down in Guangdong, there is a fully operational, completely Chinese-made computing cluster running 11,520 Ascend chips right now. The report notes it was built in just 90 days. They are achieving computing self-sufficiency at a staggering pace.
And this brings us back to lawyer Kung Jin Kim's commentary, because he masterfully synthesizes how these rapid Chinese advancements, coupled with domestic economic policies, are directly squeezing South Korea.
Let's talk about the market reaction on July 16th. The KOSPI, the main stock index in South Korea, took a brutal hit, dropping 6.37% overall.
It was a perfect storm of economic forces. The direct trigger was the Bank of Korea raising its benchmark interest rate by 25 basis points to 2.75%. It was their first rate hike in 3.5 years.
Wait, a 0.25% hike caused a massive tech sell-off. That seems like a huge overreaction for such a tiny percentage. Why did a quarter of a percent fundamentally crush the semiconductor sector? Because Samsung Electronics dropped 8.2% and SK Hynix plummeted 11.5% in a single day.
Right. It sounds small, but you have to understand the mechanics of how these chips are made. Building a single semiconductor fabrication plant costs tens of billions of dollars.
Okay.
It is an incredibly capital-intensive industry that requires massive amounts of constant debt financing. So when the central bank raises rates, borrowing that money becomes more expensive overnight. That tiny rate hike fundamentally alters their future profit margins.
Oh, I see.
When you combine that with investors who are already looking to take profits after a long AI bull run, you get a massive instantaneous sell-off.
Okay, that makes total sense. So they are incredibly sensitive to capital costs. And they are trying to navigate global capital markets to compensate. SK Hynix recently had a very successful ADR listing on the US NASDAQ, which opens them up to massive Western capital, but also exposes them to the immense volatility of US derivative markets.
Right.
Samsung actually saw its stock jump on rumors it might do the same, though they quickly denied it.
What's fascinating here is the absolute tightrope South Korea is walking. Lawyer Kung Jin Kim lays this out very clearly. Right now, Samsung and SK Hynix have a dominant, almost monopolistic lead in high-bandwidth memory HBM and DDR5 chips.
Let's clarify HBM quickly for everyone. High-bandwidth memory essentially acts as the multi-lane superhighway required to feed massive amounts of data into these AI processors. Without HBM, the processor starves for data and bottlenecks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So right now, South Korea is safe at the bleeding edge of innovation. But lawyer Kung Jin Kim points out that because of companies like CXMT getting massive $9 billion capital injections from the Chinese state, South Korean firms are going to face a brutal, scorched earth price war in generic everyday DRAM memory chips within the next 2 to 3 years.
So they are secure at the top, but getting their foundation gutted at the bottom.
Yeah.
And that's just the economic pressure. The geopolitical pressure is arguably worse. South Korea supplies advanced semiconductors and HBM to the U.S., but they supply vast amounts of memory and display tech to China. Remember that WAICO versus PAC-Silica split we talked about earlier? The two different sets of railway tracks?
The digital operating systems, yes.
Right. South Korea hasn't officially joined either camp. But as the U.S. tightens export controls to restrict AI development in China, and China pushes for total self-reliance and offers its WAICO pipeline to the global South, the pressure on South Korea to pick a side is becoming unbearable.
They are being forced to navigate an impossible choice between their primary security and technological ally in the U.S. and their massive, historically vital neighboring market in China. It is an incredibly delicate balance, and one wrong step sends shockwaves through their economy, exactly as we saw on July 16th.
So what does this all mean? We've covered a massive amount of ground today. We are watching the real-time construction of a fully parallel tech ecosystem. We have political alliances drawing hard lines on the map.
Yeah.
We have AI models generating seamless video and operating on grid-like surge pricing.
Mm.
We have humanoid robots replacing virtual companions on the factory floor. And we have a silicon backbone that is causing multi-billion dollar swings in neighboring stock markets based on fraction of a percent rate hikes.
And for you listening, it's vital to recognize that this isn't just distant geopolitical news that only matters to diplomats in Shanghai or day traders in Seoul. The outcome of this schism between WAICO and PAC-Silica, between these competing semiconductor supply chains, it directly dictates the cost of the hardware in your pocket. It drives the volatility of the global stock market, which affects retirement accounts and pension funds worldwide.
Right.
And as we see with the telecom token shift, it is going to fundamentally change how the internet itself is billed to you in the very near future.
Which brings me back to where we started. We thought we were just upgrading our apps and getting slightly better phones. But the tectonic plates underneath us are shifting. We are terraforming the entire digital and physical landscape.
Truly.
And it leaves me with this one final thought for you to mull over. If AI access transitions globally from a byte-based internet to a token-based utility, if thinking, reasoning, and processing power are priced and regulated exactly like electricity or water, how does that fundamentally change the value of human creativity and independent thought over the next decade?
Wow, yeah.
I mean, when a machine's thinking is just a fraction of a cent on your monthly utility bill, what becomes of the human architect?
That is the defining question of the next era.
It really is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the ground you're walking on, challenge your own assumptions, and we will catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.